On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Shu Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, I'm Shu Bartholomew, and we're on the Commons. We're on the Commons today with Frank Short, and we're here doing our annual St. Patrick's Day show, and we have a lot of good information for you again, as usual, as always, don't we, Frank?
I sure think that we do.
What's been going on? I know that we've had some issues going on with the courts, and there have been all kinds of issues dealing with legislation and nice, fun stuff.
Well, usually we do talk about cases decided, and we talk about legislation, and we've got a little bit of both this time. The Supreme Court of Virginia, in the last two sessions in which they agreed to hear cases, in each of those sessions they agreed to hear a homeowners association case. The most important one is a case called Fairfax County Redevelopment and Housing Authority versus Shadowwood Condominium Association et al. And that came out of course, the Circuit Court for Fairfax County, Virginia. It was decided in the Circuit Court on May 12th, 2011, and the decision was appealed to the Supreme Court of Virginia. And as I said, the Virginia Supreme Court has agreed to hear this case on appeal. Now, you wouldn't think that a case coming, you know, being brought by the Fairfax County Redevelopment and Housing Authority would necessarily be an important case for homeowners. But the issue in this case goes to an issue that we've talked about many times on this show, and that is the authority of homeowners associations to fine homeowners.
Ah, we're into the fining stories,
We're into the fining story, and the reason that we're into it is because the Fairfax County Redevelopment and Housing Authority owns some units in the Shadowwood Condominium Association. And those were apparently set aside for use in a county housing program. And the complaint alleges that the defendants, that's the condo association, assessed more than $20,000 in fines against the plaintiff for, one, failing to properly submit certain paperwork as part of the requisite unit owner's status report, and two, purported rule violations of one or more of the plaintiff's tenants. Plaintiff, it's the Fairfax County, has also alleged that the defendants attempted to suspend plaintiff's various rights and privileges as a unit owner due to failure to pay these fines.
Ah, so they're being hoisted by their own petards, are they?
Well, you know, we've talked several times on the shows about how Fairfax County government just seems to have a love affair with community associations in general, and CAI in particular. And now they find themselves being fined for rules violations. And so it's not my idea to, you know, if I had a chance to pick who I'd want representing the rights of homeowners in Property Owners Association Act cases, I don't think Fairfax County government would have been my first choice. But that's what we have. And among the findings issued by the court are the following. The issue posed by this case, this is the Fairfax County circuit court judge speaking, and that was Judge Randy I. Bellows. The issue posed by this case is whether the defendants had the authority to levy these assessments based on the master deed and bylaws or a resolution properly promulgated under the master deed or bylaws, or by Virginia Code 5579.80-2. That's the Condo Act counterpart to the Property Owners Association Act provision that governs making rules and enforcing rules. Based on its review of the condominium document, the court agrees with plaintiff's interpretation. Plaintiff, again, was Fairfax County. And finds that the sums assigned against the plaintiff in this case were beyond the defendant's authority as defined in the master deed, the bylaws, and amendments to the bylaws. In other words, and this is still the court speaking, the amounts assessed were not for the purpose of maintaining, repairing, replacing, or improving any of the common elements of the property, and therefore were improperly levied. And the court goes on to quote from the master deed and bylaws, various provisions. When they get to the analysis of the rules promulgated under the master deed and or the bylaws, they say this. Defendants, that's the condo association, argue that policy resolution 2009-03, which established the hearing procedures and assessment charges for violations of the Shadowwood governing documents, was properly promulgated and consistent with the master deed and bylaws. However, based on the analysis, it is clear that this resolution is not consistent with the governing documents and therefore is invalid. Defendants did not have the authority to assess the contested sums under this resolution. And the court quotes language that you and I talked about in the context of the Maria Ferran case, and I understand that this might have even come up in another case, Shu. The Unit Owners Association shall have the power, to the extent the condominium instruments and rules duly adopted pursuant thereto expressly so provide, to do things like fining people, you see. And the court says the defendants did not have the right to assess such charges under the governing documents and the resolution that purportedly granted them such authority was inconsistent with these instruments.
And I guess they did not raise the constitutional issue, Gilman, or anything else, did they?
If they raised it, it does not show up in the court's opinion. So, we have now another case, in addition to Ferran, another reported case, that says that the meaning of the language in the POA, when it talks about, to the extent that the condominium instruments or rules duly adopted pursuant thereto expressly so provide, does not mean that the board can write a rule giving itself the power to fine people unless that authority is conferred previously to the board in what in homeowners associations we call the declaration.
Now, would this be what we've seen, Frank, over the years is when something like this happens, the legislatures jump in there and they go, oh, we've got to fix this because these poor homeowner associations cannot maintain everything. Is this an invitation for even more stupid legislation?
Well, it was an invitation last year, and there was an attempt last year by Delegate Brink to overturn the Ferran decision. And Delegate Brink is back. And we'll talk in a minute about what he tried to do this year and what happened to it. So moving over now to the legislation side, the news is generally good. There were lots and lots of bills introduced about condominiums and homeowners associations. Most of them were bad. Most of them came from the Trade Association, the Community Associations Institute, and most of them are dead. We'll talk about what they tried to do, what happened to them, and where they are now. But on February 4th, I believe it was, sure, you will recall that there was a town hall meeting by Senator Chet Peterson and Delegate David Bulova in the old Fairfax Town Hall, and that was pretty heavily attended, and it was attended by one Frank Short and Shue Bartholomew.
The two troublemakers, right?
And, well, we talked to Delegate Bulova about a bill that he introduced, and we talked to Senator Peterson in general about a couple of bills. And they were pretty responsive to us, I think. And so we'll get into what the legislation was. I'm going to go through these in the order in which the bills were introduced. And we'll start with House Bill 297, which was introduced by Delegate E.T. Scott. And it says in parentheses after his name that it was introduced by request. When Delegate Jim Dillard was on the board, and we went to see Delegate Jim Dillard, and he talked to us about what the term by request meant. His position was that he had an obligation to introduce any legislation proposed to him by any one of his constituents, but if it wasn't his idea, he'd put behind it a by request so that everybody else would know that he wasn't stupid.
Oh, boy.
So Delegate E.T. Scott introduced a bill.
He's not stupid.
He introduced a bill that would have authorized the doubling of fines, to the extent that fines are permitted at all by the POA and the Condo Act. From the max fine for a single offense would have doubled from $50 to $100. And that was unceremoniously killed on the 25th of January in a House subcommittee. Didn't even make it to the full committee. It was a House General Laws Subcommittee on Housing that took care of that one. Then we had a series of bills introduced by Vivian Watts. Vivian Watts is a delegate who hasn't been heard from too much on homeowners association issues, and CAI seems to have discovered her. The first bill that she introduced was House Bill 410, and House Bill 410 would have changed the Condo Act and the Property Association Act with regard to recovery of fees and interests. The synopsis says it provides that in cases in which the prevailing party is the condominium association in an action against an owner for non-payment of assessments, in which the owner has repeatedly failed to pay assessments levied by the association, the award of reasonable attorney fees expended in the matter and interest on the judgment is mandatory with the court. There was no corresponding provision that the award of attorney fees to the homeowner would be mandatory if the homeowner won, but why should that be any different, you see? If what was introduced wasn't bad enough, it was amended to make it worse, and here's what was added. Even if the proceeding is settled prior to judgment.
Yeah.
The delinquent owner shall be personally responsible for all reasonable costs and attorney fees incurred by the Unit Owners Association, whether any judicial proceedings are filed. And that, unfortunately, has passed the House, has passed the Senate, and it's on its way to the governor. In the Senate, it passed by a vote of 11-3 with one abstention. In the General Laws Committee, Senator Peterson voted no. on this.
Yay for Senator Peterson.
Yep.
And he was, and two others joined him, right?
Yep.
They were in the minority.
Shu and I did not go to Richmond this year. Had we gone, that would have been one of the bills that we would have tried to do something about. House Bill 411, also from Delegate Vivian Watts, again going to recovery of costs and interest, basically very closely related to the past, to the previous bill, was stricken by the docket in general laws by voice vote on February 2nd. Vivian Watts came back with House Bill 412. And this one was basically foreclosure on the lien for unpaid assessments. This is another one of the unending series of priority of lien bills that CAI always tries to come through.
Oh, attorney fees comes first?
Yeah, they'll take precedence over the bank, and they'll take precedence over anybody else who's got a lien on your place. And these generally didn't go anywhere in the past, and this thing followed suit. On Valentine's Day, this was left in the courts of justice, and it is now dead. But not to be outdone, not to be discouraged, Delegate Watts came back with House Bill 418, Imposition of Late Fees. And notwithstanding the fact that all of these condominium and homeowners association have something in their governing documents about what their remedies are if they don't get their money on time. That's just not enough, you see. Because sometimes all they're authorized to do under their governing documents is charge interest and place a lien on your house, and then, you know, they can foreclose on the lien and throw you on, but that's not enough authority.
Not enough, huh?
No.
We need more power, well, bigger gun.
What we need is shoe. We need money. We need specific money up front.
Always
and then
money.
Because once you start charging money, then you can charge collection fees. And then you can charge attorney fees to collect the collection fees. And then you know who's going to start making the money. But we had to get the camel's nose under the tent with something small, so we started with $15. Authorizes Condominium and Property Owners Association to impose a late fee of not more than $15 on any regular or special assessment levied that is not paid on the due date for the payment of such assessment.
But in our association, Frank, it says they're late on the 30th. You've got a 30-day grace period.
That's right. And in our association and in the POA, it says that these things, the POA applies only if the governing documents are silent. Ours are not silent. Ours says here's what the remedy of the association is. So there is a remedy. So this will probably have to be played out in the courts, fighting over a $15 fine.
And the thing is, most people aren't going to fight it because it's going to cost a whole lot more to fight it in the courts.
Well, yes, but you see, it says a regular or special assessment, and you know what we treat as assessments, don't you, Shu?
We treat fines as assessments.
Yes. Yes, we do.
Isn't that lovely? I wonder whose idea that was, Frank. We'll just find them into oblivion.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that not everybody who is fined is notified of that fine. There's a fine that's just added to their account.
There have been associations known to do that, Shu.
Yes, there have been. So what do we do about that?
Well, we can talk later in another show about what some people did about that, but I don't think associations ought to be just tacking fines on to people's accounts and not telling them about it. So anyway, the final wording of this spectacular legislative victory by Delegate Watts. We'll read, except to the extent that the declaration provides otherwise, an association may impose a late fee of not more than $15 for any regular assessment or special assessment levied in accordance with 55514 that is not paid on the due date for the payment of such assessment. That's what Delegate Watts has given to the homeowners of Virginia.
Thank you, Delegate Watts.
Then we have Delegate Bolova's bill. And Delegate Bolova wanted to task a board that's called the Common Interest Community Board to develop and publish best practices for declarations and to develop a model declaration consistent with the best practices and requirements of the Condominium Act and the Property Owners Association Act. Well, now, that might not sound like such a bad idea unless you know who's on the Common Interest Community Board. And a couple of years ago, when the Common Interest Community Board was created, Shu and I went to Richmond to talk to the Senate committee and the House committee and the Virginia legislature that were considering the Common Interest Community Board. And at that time, everybody on the Common Interest Community Board was basically a CAI or a CAI affiliate. And there was no place on the Common Interest Community Board at all for anybody who just happened to live in one of these associations. In fact, the entire Common Interest Community Board could have been put together without any member of the board at all who even lived in one of these condominiums or homeowners associations. And we pointed out, you know, it might just be that if the intent of this board is to protect the rights of the people who live in these associations, you might want one or two who actually live in them. And that, in fact, is what we got. One or two.
Do you remember the argument, Frank?
Yeah.
Where are you going to find people who live in these things? You know, when virtually every single jurisdiction's got a mandate out there and 90+ some% in Fairfax are in an association,
yes.
You know, you look at what's happening in Dyer, Loudoun and Prince William and all of these counties headed south, and we can't find anyone who lives in one of these things, but we need all these laws to protect them.
Yeah, well, we need laws to protect them, and they have to be protected by a board that they're not allowed to be on. But we'll find plenty of CAI people to put on the board, because after all,
they're a dime a dozen.
Yeah, that's where the money is, you see. Yes, yes.
They're a dime a dozen.
So we actually got the law amended while we sat there, and they said, "Oh yeah, well we'll throw on a couple of people that actually live in these things." And they said, "Holy smokes, we've actually added, you know, people who live in these things. We have to do something right away to offset those votes." So then they came back with, "Well, we'll add somebody from the Virginia timeshares industry." Oh, yeah, I'm sure that'll be. Yeah. It actually says somebody from the Virginia timeshares industry.
Okay. Yeah,
thanks a lot, legislature. You
that
know.
Terry suit was a piece of work, wasn't she?
Well, she is no longer sitting in the legislature.
No, because she's going to be making a whole lot of money lobbying for some of these people that she fought for, and they're going to pay her the big bucks now.
So anyway, the Virginia Common Interest Community Board has a chairman, Shu. Do you recall who that chairman is and where we might have come across that chairman's name before?
Oh, is that Miss Pia?
Pia Trigiani.
Miss Pia. She needs to come on here.
Well, that would be truly interesting, because when she comes on here, we could talk about the fact that she was her law firm represented the old Belhaven Unit Owners Association in the Ferran case. And we've talked about the Ferran case at some length on the show. And
we're ready to have the Farrans on because their case is over with now.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll be on to talk about it real soon.
And that was a very, very big win for the homeowners.
Yes, it was.
And it was a very, very big loss for Old Belhaven and for CAI.
Yes, it was.
In their interpretation, their attempt to interpret the Property Owners Association Act. And that's the same issue that's on its way to the Supreme Court of Virginia in the Shadowwood case. You know, can a board fine homeowners unless the declaration, without explicit language in the declaration that either authorizes fines or authorizes the board to adopt rules that permit fines?
Yeah, but Frank, they're not, as far as I know, they're not addressing the constitutional issue. Once, you know, if the court reaffirmed the fact that it was an unconstitutional delegation, all of that would be gone. Now, the question in front of the court, the way I understand it, is can they do it without specific permission? And if the answer is no, in this case, the county wins. The associations will then just go and change their governing documents or change their rules, adopt a rule, giving themselves the power to do so.
Well, you can't adopt a rule unless the declaration permits you to adopt the rule. The declaration has to say the board may adopt a rule that permits the board to fine people. And if it doesn't, then under Farran, and well, there was another case besides Farran, too, then...
we ever going to talk about that one?
We're going to talk about that one, too.
Okay.
But not today. then they can't do it. So the concern here is that you've got a model declaration, see, being drafted by people who might not have the interests of the homeowners.
Might not
have the interests of the homeowners at heart in what's the, in the model declaration. And the only good news is that to amend the declaration usually takes a supermajority vote by all the owners, not the people who show up at a meeting, but if you got 1,000 owners in your association, then you better have 75% or 65% or whatever your governing documents call for to amend the declaration. Now, you're not talking about amending a bylaw here, okay? You're talking about amending the fundamental document, the constitution of your homeowners association. And that's a real vote. And that's hard to do, and that's about the only good news because this passed.
And we talked about it to him. We said, hey, David, don't be stupid. Well, we were nicer about it than that. But in essence, we tried to point out what the flaws in his legislation, and he kind of, what did he say, Frank? Mumbled?
He kind of mumbled a little bit. He knew exactly what we were talking about when we talked about what we believed was a conflict of interest in this Common Interest Community Board membership by having people who represent an industry, and in at least one case, who are lobbyists for an industry, for a trade association, for CAI, on this Common Interest Community Board. If the purpose of the board is to protect homeowners, to protect the rights of Virginians,
exactly,
then the governor, and these people are all appointed by the governor, by the way.
Yeah, the governor stood in the middle of the intersection going, I want you and you and you on there.
Well,
right?
You know, the problem is that the statute says here's who you have to appoint. You've got to appoint a lawyer, and the lawyer has to be somebody who works for the industry, who represents associations. Well, what about a lawyer who sues the pants off associations on behalf of homeowners? You might want to pick one of those. Oh, no, no, we can't be doing that. Nobody would ever volunteer to do that. Oh, okay.
The lies, the games people play.
Then we have a bill from somebody who I never heard from before. This is a delegate, James M. Lemunyon, L-E-M-U-N-Y-O-N. And this was House Bill 605. And this thing was another one of these massive penalty bills. And this would have changed the POA to say that the amount of a fine, this is what we're talking about here, in the case of a member's failure to comply with architectural control guidelines or policies or bylaws of the association. In other words, not failure to comply with a restrictive covenant, guidelines, policies, bylaws of the association pertaining to the renovation or expansion of a structure on the member's lot, the total charges for an offense of a continuing nature may continue to be assessed so long as the total amount does not exceed an amount equal to 20% of the increase in the value resulting from the renovation or expansion of the structure that fails to comply with the applicable architectural guidelines or policies or bylaws of the association. So we're not just talking about violation of a covenant that's in the declaration. Oh, no, no, no. That would be too restrictive. So we could adopt a guideline or a policy or a bylaw. And if you violate that, well, then the sky's the limit for what we can charge you. And even if the change that you make increases the value of your property and then presumably increases the value of other properties, keeping in mind, of course, that the purpose of the homeowners association is to promote property values.
Absolutely.
Well, we are going to fine the pants off of you. And we're not going to be limited to $10 a day up to $900 or $50 for a continuing offense. Oh, no, no. Fortunately, Delegate Lemunyan, this really bad bill is really dead. It was left in the House General Laws Committee on February 8th and tabled, left in General Laws on February 14th. And that was the end of that. Now, we have Delegate Scott Surville. Delegate Surville is a law partner of Senator Chap Peterson, and Delegate Scott Surville is also the attorney who represented the Ferrans in their case and who won.
Against
Old Belhaven, and right, that's right. There were a line of cases that came down out of that.
Yep.
And he won them all.
Yes, he did.
And he tried to get something through that would have required the board of directors to post on any website maintained by the association a copy of the declaration, any articles of incorporation, and all rules and regulations adopted by the board of directors. Now, I don't know how much more unreasonable you can be than trying to get the board to publish its own rules on its own website.
But if they're secret rules, then you're being extremely unreasonable there, Frank, aren't you?
Yes, 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 yes. Well, what I can't understand is why this didn't pass. This was passed by indefinitely in general laws by a voice vote, and that was House Bill 668. And that's something that I don't know why anybody would have been against it, but we didn't get it.
Because they're secret, Frank. You can't put this stuff out and let homeowners know what's going on.
Yes, it would have been the heavy hand of government.
It would have been something, yeah.
Government interference in homeowners associations, which is, as we all know, evil. Which brings us to our old friend, Delegate Robert H. Brink.
Oh, Brinky boy.
who's from the Old Town Alexandria area, been there for a while, been in the legislature for a while. Last year, he introduced a bill, the effect of which would have been to legislatively overturn the Ferran case. The legislature administered a 2x4. And after he went through his cartoon character thing of, you know, shaking his head and, you know, peeling himself off the ceiling, he brought it right back again. And what he would have done was he would have changed the provisions in the Property Owners Association Act that the court relied on in the Ferran case, that the court relied on in the Shadowwood case, and that the court also relied on in this other case that we'll be talking about some other time, where the POA says, the board of directors shall also have the power, comma, to the extent that the declaration or rules and regulations duly adopted pursuant thereto expressly so provide, it goes on to say, that then you can fine people. And Delegate Brink would have changed it to say, the board of directors shall also have the power to fine people. There would have been no requirement that the declaration or rules and regulations adopted to the declaration expressly so provided.
It's just, you don't need that.
Don't need that. So the board, without anything in the declaration authorizing them to fine or authorizing them to adopt rules permitting them to fine, could just vote to give themselves the power to fine.
Frank, don't you know that we don't need no stinking declaration?
No.
You know, we can do whatever we want because it's the board. They're the parents. The homeowners are the children.
Well, yes.
Don't forget that.
And so that was Delegate Brink. Now, this is 2 years in a row. I don't know what he's going to do to try to top it next year.
He'll find something, I'm sure.
He doesn't seem to be getting the message. So maybe his constituents, if you live in Alexandria, maybe you want to contact Delegate Brink, because he sure is getting contacted by all his CAI members down there, telling them that you were very disappointed that this didn't pass, because there would have been a lot of money in it there. And old Belhaven wouldn't be on the way to bankruptcy if we got this got this thing through. There wouldn't be people coming through with video cameras looking at the common areas, talking about this would be a nice miniature golf course if we hadn't gotten the clocks cleaned in the Ferran case. So, that's just me.
That's just you, huh?
Yes. We could talk, and we could have spent the whole show debating which was the worst bill introduced in the last legislative session. My money would have been on the one we're going to talk about next, House Bill 979, introduced by the other Scott, not E.T. Scott, but James M. Scott. 979. Would have authorized the board of directors or its agents to, quote, enter onto a lot subject to the declaration, that's any lot subject to the declaration, as may be reasonably necessary to remedy the failure of the lot owner to comply with the declaration or rules and regulations of the association. The association, this authority may be used only after the board has exhausted all other internal efforts to achieve compliance, including an opportunity for the lot owner to take corrective action and reasonable notice is provided. And of course, then we would have been able to charge the unit owner for any costs that we incurred when we entered into his lot to correct this deficiency, you see.
They ought to watch the story out of Lake George that came out years ago in Florida, where the board did just that, and they went on the property while the homeowners were at the funeral of their infant, and they painted a flipping chimney and charged the homeowners and then foreclosed to collect that charge, the fines and everything. And the abuses, Frank, are just incredible.
The abuses are all isolated incidents. I mean, didn't you go to that indoctrination class?
Yeah, I wasn't indoctrinated.
And don't you watch that CIA infomercial on Channel 38 or wherever it is?
The 16, the Fairfax County Government Center. They're being hoisted by their own petards, fortunately.
Yes. Well, anyway, this thing, I'm sure, was the poster child for the CAI legislative agenda this year. And It was left in the House General Laws on 14 February, never made it out to the full House, and it is dead.
Maybe we ought to give awards to people who come up with the most idiotic and invasive legislation, even if it dies.
Well, maybe we need to go to Richmond next year with a mallet and a stake in case this guy tries to bring it back like Delegate Brink did. Because this thing, folks, that's why we have courts. The association can go to a court, get an injunction, a court order for the homeowner to paint his chimney. And if the association does that and the association wins, then they get attorney fees. They don't need to be going onto your lot. They don't need to be going into your home. They don't need to be doing that. And the legislature shouldn't be helping them to do that. That's why we have courts.
Post your property.
Yeah, that's what Fred Goldbecker did.
Absolutely, post your property. They're going to complain about the signs, but they've got to give them something to complain about, right, Frank?
Oh, yeah. Now we have Delegate David I. Ramadan and his House Bill 1008. Delegate Ramadan, I'm sure that he thought that what he was trying to do in this bill was to help homeowners. And we'll talk about why bills like this are not such a spectacularly good idea. He entitled this bill Condominium and Property Owners Association Acts, Rights of Owners. And he would have provided that no provision of the declaration or rules or regulations adopted pursuant thereto shall prohibit an owner or any person entitled to occupy a unit or lot from exercising his constitutionally protected right of freedom of speech upon the property to which the owner or persons entitled to occupy has a separate ownership interest or a right to exclusive possession. Well, it also would have allowed an association to establish a reasonable time, place, or manner restriction on such property, provided that the restrictions are necessary to protect the substantial interest of the association. And it would have required the association to bear the burden of proof that such time, place, or manner restriction is necessary to protect the substantial interest of the association. And finally, it would have provided that the association could restrict an owner's exercise of freedom of speech upon the common areas.
Oh, it could?
Yes.
That's stupid.
Well, I suppose. But I'm sure that Delegate Ramadan thought he was helping associations by carving out something and saying, you have this right. What he needs to do next time is come back and say, you know what, boys and girls? Your constitutional rights don't stop when you drive onto a homeowners association. Homeowners associations have to respect them. We're not going to be giving you your rights back one at a time such that if we leave one off...
Yeah, then you don't have...
Well, if the legislature wanted you to have this right, they would have included it on the list.
You know what, Frank? He might be a good one to ask to carry something like that next year because I understand, and I haven't confirmed this, I understand he sued his homeowners association and won.
I understand that, too. But, see, people who do that want to legislate, you know, their particular victory.
Absolutely.
And the problem is that there's a principle of statutory construction that reads in Latin, inclusio unius, exclusio alterius, which means if you've got a list of things, the legislature intends that list of things to be an exclusive list of things. So if it's a list of rights that you have in a homeowners association and there's something that's not on it, you don't have that right.
Yeah. No, so, I understand that. And what I'm saying is bringing him back to say your constitutional rights don't stop at the gates of homeowner hell. You know, you still maintain those.
Yep. Well, anyway, for those of you who want to contact Delegate Ramadan, that was House Bill 1008, and it is dead. It was continued to 2013 by the House General Laws Committee, and so it may come back, and hopefully if it comes back, it'll come back as something, as they say in the law, more better. Next, we hear again from Delegate James M. Scott with his House Bill 2013, which would have removed the cap on charges that a unit owners association may assess against the unit for violation of the condominium instruments or rules and regulations. One of his compatriots, and I forget which one it was right now, wanted to double it from Vivian Watts, from double it from $50 to $100 a day for a single offense. Well,
this bloke just wants to say, go ahead, find anything you want.
Well, he would have had it. Charges must be reasonable in consideration of the seriousness of the violation and the history of previous violations.
Ay. Okay.
Really? So there would have been no cap at all. I see. Now, this thing would have applied only to the Condominium Act, not to the Property Owners Association Act. I don't know why he thought that was a spectacularly good idea. I mean,
get us out of the way.
If you want to go around finding people, let's find them all, Delegate Scott. This thing was happily laid on the table in the House subcommittee by a voice vote, and it is dead. Now, remember years ago our friend Delegate Mark Sickles?
Oh, how could I forget Mark Sickles?
Yeah, he wanted to keep draft rules and draft policy resolutions secret.
Minutes.
And we wouldn't draft minutes. See, we wouldn't be able to see them, you see, until after the board had actually approved them. The effect of that would have been that if there was a policy the board was going to talk about and they put it out in the agenda packet, we wouldn't be able to see what they're going to talk about in order to exercise the right that the POA does give us to talk to the board about what they were going to do. I guess they would have allowed us to see it, maybe after they adopted it, but then we got this other clown who didn't want to put it on the internet. That can't happen. After we adopt them, we can't be putting them on the website there, Ethel. You know, that's a bad idea. Can't be letting them. Anyway.
Well, the funny thing was, Frank, when I called him, I said, what the hell do you think you're doing? He was so flustered that I got a call from Pia saying, I understand you're not happy.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes. Anyway, Delegate Sickles came back with his House Bill 1256, provides that such portion of the unpaid assessments due and owing to an association for a period not to exceed 3 years, it is attributable to providing the maintenance and upkeep of the common areas and other such areas of the association responsibility expressly provided for in the declaration, including capital expenditures, shall be prior to all other liens and encumbrances except any real estate taxes, blah, blah, blah. So this is another one of these priority of lien things, and this is as dead as Delegate Sickles' secret policy resolution thing was a couple of years ago. But this was House Bill 1256. Then we have Delegate James M. Scott, again, he and Vivian Watts are getting to be two of the two of the leading lights in
Spark plugs, as they call them in some circles.
Yes. And House Bill 1213 would simply remove the cap on charges that a unit owners association may assess against any unit for a violation of the condominium instruments or rules and regulations. Currently, such charges are limited to $50 for a single offense and $10 a day for up to 90 days. Under the bill, such charges must be reasonable in consideration of the seriousness of the violation and the history of previous violations. That's dead. Now, I don't know which of those bills, Shu, that you thought was the worst. But the fact that we had so many of them killed, either in subcommittee or in committee, and didn't even get out of the House of Delegates, overall means, I think, that this was not too bad a year for us. We didn't get some of the ones I kind of hope we get. The one about the $15 charges for late fees, I don't like. Maybe in our association, where the governing documents say this is the remedy of the association, maybe if we challenge that, we'd be able to win. But the language at the end, you know, not, you know, unless the governing documents specifically provide otherwise, this is what you can do. We'd have to win on that fight. Well, our governing documents do specifically provide otherwise. This is the remedy of the association. If the association wants another remedy, they can go amend the governing documents and get 75% vote.
Yeah, but Frank, the thing is, we're looking at that from our perspective because ours is an older association. But what they've done in the intervening years is, because of all of the enabling legislation that's come down and because they've increased the powers of associations by so much, the authors of these declarations, the Bob Diamonds, the Wayne Hyatts, who sit there and write these things, the newer declarations are the size of a flipping phone book. And they have all of those powers in them because they've got this enabling legislation. So for us, yes, it'll work. For everybody, no, it won't.
That's correct. And that's why when they come to you and they say, why don't you vote for these amendments to the declaration? Be very, very careful. Because what they want to do is take away rights that belong to you.
Absolutely.
And give them to the board of directors. And Absolutely. If you're lucky, you might get a right or two back as a privilege, but it will come with a whole bunch of strings.
I was talking to someone the other day who says, you know, I'm the president of my association. I'm just really a nice guy, and I'm going to rewrite the bylaws. I said, I'm going to. He says, well, we have all these bad homeowners. I wouldn't do that. Because remember in our association, Frank, we told someone, you know, they decided, you're talking about these $15 late fees. They actually had a rule for $15 late fees and all kinds of other fees. And we told them, this is not going to stand up. Well, this person was hoisted by its own petard because this person's child ended up buying an association and being caught by this. Mm. And it cost this homeowner a ton of money. In fact, I think it cost the house to defend against a rule that she wouldn't listen to us when we tried to explain that you couldn't do this.
Yep.
And so be careful what you wish for. It might not always be the best thing for anybody.
Well, happy St. Patrick's Day, folks. And we'll see you again next year. Maybe it'll even be a show or two before then.
I certainly hope so. Thanks, Frank. Thanks for coming on and doing this. Always enjoy having you here.
It's always fun.
And we'll keep your seat warm for a really soon encore.
Hope so.
Thank you, folks. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.